we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Visit Wales website read by Cathy Clugston.
Short breaks in Wales are never too long. Within a few hours, you can be shopping in Cardiff's arcades, getting out the bucket and spade, or pulling on your helmet for 48 hours of gripping weekend adventure.
Our thanks to Alan Johnson in Clandilo for sending that muck in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Hugo Rifkind and Lucy Porter. And opposite them on my left, Samira Ahmed and Jeremy Hardy. So, Hugo, who's written a book? Might as well keep it simple. Who's written a book?
Who's written a book? Well, this is Lord Ashcroft, I'd imagine. Lord Ashcroft's biography of David Cameron, which has gathered quite a lot of headlines this week because it includes some quite sensational claims, some of which may be true, some of which might not be true. And you might be thinking to yourself, how can a book include claims that might not be true? You know, why does, for example, being sued hold no fears for the billionaire Lord Ashcroft? And indeed, his publisher, how did the people who work at his publisher and who commissioned this particular book, how did they manage to get the whole project past the man who owns the publisher, who is the billionaire Lord Ashcroft? And these are questions, alas, to which I just have no answer. But I can give you the backstory, basically, is that Lord Ashcroft, he was the Tory party treasurer. He gave millions of pounds to the party before the 2010 election. And it's reasonable to assume that off the back of this, he expected to get a decent job in government, not least because he said he did. But he didn't. He got offered a job of being a junior whip in the Foreign Office. And so he sort of walked off in a bit of a huff. And it's pretty reasonable to assume he's written this book by means of revenge. Now, there are some quite important claims in here. There's one, for example, that that ought to capture our attention, which is the idea that Cameron knew about Ashcroft's non-dom status long before it's been said that he did. And that's the sort of thing we've been really trying to concentrate on this week in the media, over the sound of this sort of background rattling hum that sort of goes, nobbin' a pig, nobbin' a pig, nobbin' a pig. And you try and put it to the back of your mind, you really do. You try and get over it, and you go, no, but this is really significant because there was a particular date in November of 2000 and nobbin' a pig, nobbin' a pig. And it was, you just cannot concentrate on anything else. It's impossible to look at camera now without thinking nobbin' a pig, nobbin' a pig, nobbin' a pig. And, I mean, what's the point? What's the point of anything? What's the point of a satirical news show when you can go on Question Time and say, do you think the Prime Minister put his knob in a pig? Yeah, everything is topsy-turvy. Everything is disjoint and out of frame.
Peter didn't do PMQs this week, did he? Have they done it?
No.
No.
Oh, because that would have been... You could have sent so many things into Jeremy, couldn't you? That you could have read out. The owner of a prize-winning sow in Cumbria would like the Prime Minister to say if he has any plans to go to Cockermouth. But the best thing was that when they said that they would not dignify it, and you think, well, that means it's true, doesn't it? When they say, I'm not even going to dignify that truth. And, of course, a lot of Tory MPs from rural constituencies are urgently seeking reassurances that the pig was A, British, and B, female. But then there's people, a lot of people who are at Oxford saying, I was a doctor at that time and involved in various drinking clubs and so forth, and no such initiation ritual exists. You think, then he hasn't even got an excuse if it wasn't even expected. I mean, it's one thing if it's some kind of insane bit of ridiculous protocol like singing the national anthem that you just have to kind of get through. But if he just did it on his own initiative, that really is. And then people saying, well, we've all done stupid things at university. Yeah, but, you know, nicking a traffic cone is not, you know, even when you're really drunk, it's not the same as popping into the old pig's head for a spritzer, is it?
I was reading the news and I was in bed on my phone going through Twitter, and I sort of saw it and I sort of swore quite loudly, and my wife woke up and she goes, what's happened? And I was like, oh, it's just the news. And she goes, is it a bomb? And I heard myself say, no, it's worse than that.
But you compare it to Jeremy Corbyn, and there'd been a lot of complaints to the BBC saying all the kind of attempts to slander Jeremy Corbyn and, you know, going on holiday in East Germany, having sex with another consenting adult, outrageous. But this, is it really getting reported, but then, you know, what can you say on air about this? But I don't think outside of Britain anyone really knows about this, and certainly it's no one's talking about it. I tried to find a single American network where they might have discussed it, but the only thing that disgusts them, it's not sort of mass violence and massacres, it's the idea of anything to do with sex. And I think it was Harry Kunzru in the New York Times said, and he told his American friends, they all went, oh, my God, the germs.
Well, exactly. Let's hope he was wearing a non-dom at the time.
There's a lot of worse stuff in that book. I went through to see what else Michael Ashcroft had found, and I was really shocked. He liked snooker, Midsummer Murders, and, quote, he went to see the crude Sacha Baron Cohen movie Borat and laughed throughout.
Can I just raise it? I mean, I do actually feel a bit weird about talking about this, because I do feel it's not him so much. It's his children. I just feel really sorry for his children. I just think it's a real shame. You know, they're sitting there on their own in a pub somewhere. just gazing at the pork scratchings, thinking, you know. No, I do think it's a bit, I don't know, I just feel a bit about the whole thing.
It's also important to sort of remember that he probably didn't actually do it. You know, I mean, this is wow. You know, this is an angry man who didn't get a job, who's written a book accusing him of this ridiculous thing that everyone's now slagging him off for, and he probably didn't actually do it.
But
still very funny, but still probably didn't actually do it.
Yeah, well, who is the source? You must know, you're a journalist.
No, I don't, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. I'd totally tell you if I did, but I don't know. No, it says in the book that it is a Conservative MP who was at Oxford at the same time as Cameron.
I'm sure we're fine here on legal grounds. Who probably was the source?
don't you wonder if it had been Boris that it would all have been presented differently?
Well, of course I did. Of course I. Come on, we've all done it, haven't we? What's the Latin word for it?
Indeed. Extraordinarily. This is the Daily Mail serialisation of a new book by former Conservative Party treasurer and cat-stroking Bond villain Lord Ashcroft. The book is a biography of David Cameron, a man who apparently likes his bacon crispy around the edges and moist in the middle. And is believed to be motivated by a desire for revenge after Cameron failed to offer him a significant government position. Perhaps the biggest shock in all this is that Lord Ashcroft has written something that I'm actually interested in reading. Of course, some of the more lurid allegations in the book could just be a tactical leak designed to remind us all that Jeremy Corbyn is a vegetarian and thus completely out of touch with the hopes and aspirations of ordinary, hard-working people, many of whom would love to be able to lay their hands on a pig's head and have the chance to violate it. keep dreaming, you strivers. Two points to Hugo. Lucy, who has made a sin of omission?
Yes, this is the Vorsprung durch Betrügen, or progress through cheating. the story of... I think for years all of us we've wondered, how do the Germans manage to make their cars so reliable, efficient and environmentally friendly? And now we've found out the answer is they don't. they just lie. So, yes, VW have been found to be cheating. And they've admitted now they fitted 482,000 Audis and Volkswagens with defeat devices, which are basically, it's a device that allows the vehicle's computer to know when it's being tested, and so then it performs at a much lower capacity, which actually is a lot like my brain, as my A-level results will attest.
It is a bit unfair, this notion that, like, the problem is that there are the tests that they do to measure the emissions, and they have nothing to do with sort of normal driving experience. But that's pretty normal with driving, because your driving test has nothing to do with normal driving experience. You're never going to reverse around a corner. You're never going to have to parallel park without slightly crashing into the car. We sort of exist.
You'd never give a lift to a man with a clipboard.
Exactly. You're never going to drive without swearing. Yeah. But we sort of labour under this sort of EU-sponsored fiction that that's what driving's really like, and it's just not.
I drove a VW Golf about 10 years ago, and they couldn't even get the cup holder in the right place then. So this is it's come on somewhat. But one of the things that's emerged is that the EU has much lower standards for air pollution testing than the US, which is incredible, because I've been to LA, which is basically just smog central. And it turns out, like, you know, compared to them, we've been living in the equivalent of Keith Richards' lungs.
It is a conspiracy, though, that America has stricter tests on emissions, because America is only stricter for diesels, for nitrogen dioxide emissions that you get from diesels. They don't give a toss about CO2, which is what warms the planet. And the reason why they care about diesels is because pretty much all diesel cars in America are imported from Europe. And so one of the reasons why they're going so big on this, and they should be, it's a con, obviously, but one of the reasons why they're going so big on this is to squash European imports so they can have their own ridiculous gas-guzzling cars there instead.
Well, I'm not worried at all because I drive an Audi.
And isn't the whole reason that we have so many diesel cars because they just had, like, there was a load of cheap diesel in the 90s, and so they just went, oh, have that.
We can blame Tony Blair for this.
Oh, good.
Does anyone know?
just on general principles. Just
because they encouraged a bit. Well, possibly not unreasonably, they were more worried about CO2 emissions because of, you know, that was what we worried about in the 90s. It was all you know, colour change T-shirts and Nirvana and greenhouse gases. That was what we were into back then.
So we danced to.
That was our thing. But so they sort of thought, well, actually, you know, maybe the... I keep saying nitrous oxide, which is not the right gas, is it? That's fun. That's the fun one.
Is it?
Nitrous oxide is laughing gas, yes. This is nitrogen oxide. But, yeah, so they sort of thought, well, we'll sacrifice people in the short term for the sake of the planet in the long term.
Well, they thought diesel was greener. That was what we
Because
were
VW
told.
Were telling them that it was.
Well, I've made a conscious decision because it is better for climate change, which affects my daughter and her children's future generations. Whereas I've got asthma, so I'm prime candidate to suffer from breathing in diesel. So I figure that I'm sacrificing my life by breathing diesel for future generations, in a way.
You are selfish.
And it's so much cheaper. Oh.
How big a scandal do we think this is, on a scale of one to putting your willy in a pig's mouth? About a seven?
It's pretty big.
It's quite easy to falsify emissions. All you have to do is blame the dog.
Well, appallingly, this is the news that Volkswagen have admitted installing software in their diesel cars designed to cheat US emissions tests, making the cars seem much more environmentally friendly than they actually are. The BBC reported that the scandal could hit 11 million vehicles, much like a Sunday afternoon drive with George Michael. One German newspaper has called it the most expensive act of stupidity in the history of the car industry, but I think we should probably reserve judgment until we've seen the new Top Gear. 2 points to Lucy. Jeremy, who's held a small gathering?
Ah, the Lib Dems. Now, it is true to say that a space has opened up for the Lib Dems, a space called Oblivion. Perhaps space is the wrong word. Perhaps black hole, vortex, abyss has opened up. And the new star, their new leader, is Tim Farron. And he decided to make a speech because, you know, they do that. And he's opened very movingly because they all like to do their biography. And he's had very humble origins. And he stood up and he talked about he was born a coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Hollow. They were poor, but they had love. That's the one thing that Daddy made sure of. He gathered coal to earn a poor man's dollar. And then, he did all that. And then this rather odd thing happened because what he did was he laid into the wickedness. He talked about the cold-blooded, heartless wickedness of the Tories and how much he was looking forward to propping them up in another coalition. In a few years' time. Now, this was the man who got all the credibility from not really backing the Liberals going in to the coalition and voting against a lot of stuff and saying he gave it 2 out of 10. And now he was just singing the praises of what they did in the coalition. So it's just this bizarre speech about how the Liberals are moderates, which basically means they're anybody's. Anybody's for a seat in government.
It was a well-delivered speech, though. It was that bit at the end where it was like the, you know, generals were advised to march their troops towards the sound of gunfire. Well, troops, I hear gunfire. And I was like, oh, bloody, I'm turned on. I don't know what he's talking about. But...
And, of course, his guns were rather spiked because he'd been... And the minute Jeremy Corbyn got him, he started talking about... He was getting loads of text messages from the Labour right, and there were going to be defections, and we were all wondering which defective right-wing Labour MPs it was going to be. But everyone was very excited. The Liberals were all very, very, very excited because they're back in their comfort zone of powerlessness, shouting into the wilderness about the unfairness of things, so they're all right.
I once got kicked out of the Liberal Democrats. I joined for a joke. It was when I was writing a gossip newspaper diary, and they had that leadership contest where everyone running for the leadership was either an alcoholic or secretly gay or had been found doing unspeakable things with rent boys in a bath, and it was just a fiasco. And I discovered it's a bit like what happened recently with the Labour Party, but I discovered you could join for £6 and get a vote in the leadership election. So I joined the party and wrote about it in the column, and they phoned me up the next day and they said, we want to know if you're going to bring the party into disrepute. And I said, is it obligatory? and they didn't find that funny at all, and they kicked me out. He quoted Joni Mitchell as well, didn't he?
Yeah. He did.
He said, doesn't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? Which is, of course, from Big Yellow Taxi, which is what the electorate told them to leave in. Yeah. So a little unwise.
No, he's based quite a lot of policy on the song Big Yellow Taxi. He also aims to build 300,000 new homes by paving paradise. Do you think it was a good atmosphere at the conference, considering everything? Or was it more like a sort of post-funeral
Did all
reception?
8 MPs turn up?
Yeah, they all came in one van.
Yeah.
one big yellow taxi. Yeah.
But did all the Liberal MPs stand in the leadership thing? Because I read somewhere, it said he's breaking with tradition by not appointing a kind of shadow cabinet. And I thought, well, it would be quite difficult to be shadow minister for stuff, shadow minister for various other stuff, shadow minister for miscellaneous.
Yeah, it'd be like Amdram, where you go, you're in the chorus, but you're also Macbeth.
Sensationally, this is the Lib Dem conference, which was held, appropriately enough, in Bournemouth, where so many things go at the end of their lives. Their new leader, Tim Farron, made a speech setting out his party's plans to become a dynamic force in the centre ground of British politics, which was rapturously received by both the audience. He claimed Lib Dems were now the only credible alternative to the Conservatives, seemingly forgetting the sweet release of death. Labour politicians have been offered a home with the Liberal Democrats, which is a bit like finding a puppy huddled in an alleyway and rehoming it in a wheat thresher. Farron claims that many MPs don't recognise the Labour Party anymore, although if you're having trouble spotting, it's the one with the website covered in pictures of Chairman Mao. He claimed there are millions of people in Britain who know in their hearts that they are Liberals. The thing there, Tim, is that the word Liberals is tarnished a bit when you stick the word Democrats onto the end of it, like adding zero onto the end of Coke or laxative onto the end of chocolate. 2 points to Jeremy. And at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Lucy have 4, and so too does Samira and Jeremy. And we start round two with a cutting from The Times.
A gardener whose first homegrown courgette grew to 7 feet has preserved it and mounted it in her garden shed.
Thanks to Dick Carlion for sending us that filth. Lucy, who has been getting themselves in a bit of the States?
This is a story about my... This may be controversial, but my current crush. I've got a big thing for the Pope. I absolutely properly love him.
He is single.
Yeah, never let it be said I go for unattainable men, you know. Yes, so Pope Francis has gone over to America and is wowing the crowds. It was all a bit tense before he went over there. They were all worried, basically. The Republicans were thinking, you know, they're wondering if he's going to attack them over climate change. The Democrats are wondering if he'd bring up the equal marriage laws. Donald Trump was wondering if he could find the Pope's birth certificate and prove he's actually a Muslim. So, because he arrives, he's cool. He had a little tiny black Fiat waiting for him, not one of these big SUVs that everyone else was driving. He gets into his little Fiat. And the Americans' minds were blown by this. But no, it's just he was making a point about, you know, not being a sort of excessive consumer. And he has been determined to emphasise the importance of humility, from the tiny car to having lunch with the homeless. He's like Jeremy Corbyn in a frock. but generally, the impression has been that he's been kind of quite left-leaning in his views, leading some Republicans to be furious. There was one Republican I heard saying that he should butt out of politics. You know, his infallibility applies to spiritual, not political matters. And it was just lovely to hear a Republican saying that religion and politics shouldn't be combined. But yeah, so he's amazingly charismatic, whatever you think of him.
He's a bit more controversial than that, though, isn't he? So, you know, the Catholic bishops have had a huge scandal with historic child abuse, and he praised the courage of bishops for how they'd handle that, which has gone down that well with survivors of child sex abuse. And, you know, the man who's going to canonise, Junipero Serra, the Franciscan who set up all those missions, he used to work for the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah.
and is
how old is he?
And is believed to be very much involved in the reason that most of the Native Americans were virtually wiped out by disease because of all that forced labour and torture.
A lot of syphilis.
Apart from that...
Apart from all those things, absolutely wonderful guy. Won't hear.
What I like about the Pope is, I mean, he makes it all look very easy, poping, doesn't he? I'm not happy about his abandoning of the Popemobile, though. I was a big fan of Popemobiles. But I remember I once had to research Popemobiles for an article, and it's fascinating, the history of Popemobiles. One of the earliest Popemobiles was designed with gun turrets for some state visits because it was going to be somewhere where they thought he might be under attack. But the Vatican ruled out gun turrets because they decided that it wouldn't look good for the Pope to shoot back.
Well, sacramentally, this is the visit of the Pope to the United States, where he made remarks about climate change, which were seen as controversial by those Americans who believe the Pope is God's divine and infallible representative on Earth, but who find climate change a bit of a stretch. It's hard to take issue with anything the Pope says, because doctrinally, he is never wrong, which is why he remains the reigning champion on the Vatican City's version of Trivial Pursuit. Doesn't matter what it says on the back of the card, mate, let's just all remind ourselves which one of us is the Pope. 2 points to Lucy. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Love can build a bridge between your heart and mine. What a timely reminder of the power of music. Jeremy, who's building a bridge to a sporting future?
I don't know who that was. Can you tell us who it was, by the way?
Cher?
OK.
Chrissy Hynde and Nina Cherry.
Okay. Well, it's bridge, isn't it? People who run bridge, whoever runs the bridge, I don't know, the Illuminati or the Build a Bridge Group, one of those people, they are irate that Sport England do not recognise bridge as a sport on the pretext of the fact that it plainly is a card game. Where no one gets out of breath or chucks anything or gets a sweaty groin or puts on special things. But bridge has been involved in some cheating scandals recently, which is quite sporty. They have been involved in some cheating scandals that they've been doing random synatogen tests. A couple of people tested positive for fibergel as well. But they said the barrister sort of sneered, well, darts is a sport and it's no more energetic lifting pints than it is shuffling cards. I thought, yeah, but actually, accurately throwing a dart when you're that drunk takes quite a lot of muscular control, whereas simply sitting, playing bridge, wondering whether you're going to live past lunch is not... it's not cardiovascular, shall we say, is it?
My granny used to play bridge, and for years I thought that all bridge was, it was just like snap. Instead of saying snap, you said bridge.
Is it not even that much fun?
Apparently that's not true, no.
There is something in that it is, they were saying, well, at least it's a sport for old people, and there's not that many sports that old people can readily take part in.
There was this guy this week who's been doing all the Olympics while being old, wasn't there? Did you see that? This 80-year-old guy is doing pole vaulting and running and... hope somebody else knows about this. This is all I've got. But he was definitely in the newspaper. Old man, pole vaulting. Come on. I didn't dream this. I can't dream this.
I want to see it. It would be good. Well, yeah, I find the older I get, the funnier it gets when I exercise. When I go to the gym now, it's hilarious. The noises I make, the things that come out, it's all hilarious. It's only going to get better.
This man, Hugo, that only you have...
Yes.
Yeah. Your sort of dream man. He's competing not against anyone else, he's just doing events on himself?
I only saw the pictures. I don't know. I was in a meeting about it. I wasn't paying attention.
There was a meeting about it?
I'm going to get in trouble.
Vexingly, this is the ongoing struggle to get Sport England to recognise bridge as a sport. Yes, we've banged on about geopolitics and corporate scandals, but mention bridge and suddenly the audience stirs arthritically into life. People say bridge doesn't get you fit, but let me assure you, nothing gets the heart racing like a group of bullies chasing you home from bridge club. Of course, bridge will never be embraced as a British national sport until we can watch it abroad while systematically destroying a restaurant. It's been suggested that bridge becoming a sport could help tackle childhood obesity. I guess because if people are constantly playing bridge, they won't have time to feed their fat children. Two points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the all-important final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Hugo.
This has been sent in by Ben Cooper, and it's from Yoga Newsletter. And it's advertising yoga for anxiety. And it says, if you are not able to come to our yoga for anxiety workshops, don't worry.
Lucy.
Pauline McGerty, thank you, Pauline, has sent this one in. And it's from the Horsham and Southwater Freecycle site. Excellent thing, Freecycle. And someone is offering on this free site a fancy dress penguin suit. And their description is just the cutest thing ever. It says, outfit has hood with eyes and beak, so the wearer's face is not covered, and yellow feet that elastic over the top of wearer's shoes. Also, red bow tie, but that could be removed if a more serious penguin look was required.
Jeremy.
This is from Liam Ashby, who sent it in, and it's from the ITV News website. A unique interactive map which shows the location and severity of road collisions over the past decade was so popular that it crashed soon after launch.
Thank you. And so let us take a look at the final score. And we see that Hugo and Lucy have 8, but Samira and Jeremy have 9. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Hunstanton Town and Around newsletter sent in by Rod Butcher.
Some 2,000 visitors have gone through the door at the Heritage Centre since we opened 2 years ago this month. Visitors have come from as far away as Australia, Ukraine and Kettering.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Rifkind, Lucy Porter, Samira Ahmed and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by Lee Kathy Clugston. The chair's script was written by Max Davis, John Hunter and James Kettle, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Claire Wetton. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Radio Comedy production.